Hey guys, what's up? How we're doing? Rico here. I know it's been a while since we last recorded the podcast, and the main reason for that is because we've been on low for a bit. Alvaro, he moved back to London. I moved to Amsterdam from Groningen, which is northern Netherlands. So lots of stuff have been happening in both our lives, and it became quite difficult to organize a podcast. So a trend you'll be seeing more from now on is that I'll be hosting most of the podcast, and I'll be talking to our guests, and we're going to be talking to different guests. So with no further ado, today we have a very special guest, one of my favorites. His name is Danny Urbanus. And Danny is a consultant in the Netherlands, consulting for different Magic TV shows, specials, like New Year specials. And he's also known from releasing his tricks like Lazy Man's Penetration, Bordica, and many other tricks that you can find on his website. I would say that Danny is a truly creative mind, and in this episode we're going to talk about the creativity and magic, building a show, being genuine and authentic. And the thing I found most interesting was talking about context with Danny. We're talking about in which situations a deck of cards, for example, would fit in the context, and in which situations maybe more organic magic would fit. Whether that's a show, or whether that's a walk-around scenario, or even whether you're meeting someone in a bar. I find that a very interesting thought experiment, so I hope all of you guys enjoy it. And with no further ado, let's get into the podcast.
There we go.
Ooh. How are you, Danny?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, man. What have you been up to lately?
Switching jobs to the consulting again. And just writing my own show at the moment, reading a lot of books, learning a lot of new tricks. So
you're learning a bit of everything. You're learning like new tricks for the show, or how is that?
It's a bit of both. So I'm writing the show and then figuring out the best methods for the trick. Mm-hmm. It's still in early progress. So it's first figuring out what the story is going to be about and which trick's going to be fall into it. And then after that, some things I certainly know I want to put in the show because I like mm-hmm. the story, but I don't have a really trick for it yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm just searching for the theme and then finding out which trick fits best with the story instead of the other way around.
Right. So when I heard that, it's like you sort of like wrote the concept for the show and you say, I want to have this storyline go from here to there. And then mm-hmm. depending on where you are in the storyline, you want certain tricks that give you a feeling or something?
No, it's more like I have a theme, what I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. I'm now also figuring out the ending. Like, what's the story gonna be further after the show? So what are gonna people talk about when they leave the show instead of like, this is the end, goodbye? So I want to resolve the show, of course, with a nice big ending, but I want to leave it the conversation starts at there when they leave the theater. So I'm working on that, and yeah, by the big theme, I have some sections with other themes that fit in the big theme. Mm-hmm. And then I'm now working out effects and tricks that works within these subplots of the bigger story.
And then it's your, like, your idea for the show to be more like trick, 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 and within those tricks you have stories? Or is it like you're going to tell like a general story and interwoven in the stories there would be tricks?
Yeah, the second one. It's like the tricks are going to complement the story instead of the other way around.
Mm. So kind of a bit like what the Dr. Gadia did.
Yes, sort of. Different theme. Different feelings, I think. So, yeah. But still in the baby step. So, yeah. Just still figuring it out. And yeah, it's my first show written. I've done shows before on stage and thing, but it's more of like trick-based, story-based kind of shows. So you have a story mm-hmm. with a trick And then you go to the next trick, go to the next trick, and then there's not an overall theme. And for this, it in my mind is more like theater. So
Right.
it's more of a play with magic than its actual magic show. I want to
Mm.
also like hit certain topics and get a discussion going after the show.
But then, like, do you also have certain things in place that make sure that you finish writing the show? Because, like, very often people get stuck in that trap of like perfectionism, and they just want to go like, it's never good enough. I always have to keep writing. You always come up with new stuff, but also like one day it has to be done, right? So do you have like a
Yeah,
deadline
fun.
for yourself or something?
No, not yet. So at the moment, it's just gathering information and just like look at pictures, watch movies, like get inspiration about the theme. So you have a certain theme, and now I'm searching, reading, watch movies, listen to music, everything that's in that genre to get like inspiration and also figuring out what my opinion is about the theme, because I think that's also very important.
That's interesting also. Because then you're not sure yet what your own opinion is about it, then how did you decide I'm going to make a show about this?
I think because it's a nice topic for this day and age. And yeah, the theme, I can say it's about like identity and like your social identity versus your real life identity, like the
Interesting.
contrast. So like who are you showing? Like a good example is like if you're gonna make an Instagram video, you're gonna clean up your room, you're gonna make everything nice, that everything is good in the shot. But when the shot's done, like it doesn't matter your bed is messy or that there's like a food tray in your room and that there's drinks. But when you put the camera on and you want people to see, then everything is important, that everything is nice and neat. And I want to pick that topic as like it's interesting, like who are we in the real world versus who are we showing we are.
That's so funny because like next to me here there's like a pile of underwear and shit, but I put it next to the washing bin because otherwise we'll be on the closet and in frame.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, I still don't have the best shot though for this, but hey, it works.
Yeah, but I think it's an interesting topic, and I think it's interesting to tell and to show people what it's actually about, like what do they think of everything.
So you picked it not from a point of like, I have an opinion about this yet, but more from a point where you go like, I find this interesting enough to discover more about it. And you want
Yeah.
to share something with other people about the discoveries that you made.
Yeah, it's more like I have a certain opinion about it, but I have not seen both sides of the story yet completely. So, like I can debate like with people who are against it or for it, like maybe they can swing me around, like, oh, this is a point I didn't think of, or oh, that's a really good point. Why nobody ever told me.
Yeah, so it's more like you want to investigate all types of opinions about this subject.
Yeah, like I'm also on Instagram. I also make movies, so I have my own point of view. I think what I think about it, but like I'm just doing 1% of what like content creators do. So I cannot, I don't tap really into the mindset of them. So is it then really valid if I have like an ongoing point, like this is my opinion, this is why it's wrong, if I'm not sure?
Yeah, that makes sense.
If I like, I need all the facts from both sides that I can have an honest opinion and that I can like really discreetly say like I like it or I don't like it.
Yeah, and
and
I
mob
guess also
people.
like before you have an opinion like worth sharing, because otherwise it's just like a one-sided point of view.
Yeah. But that's why I think it's an interesting topic. Like also like who are we showing ourselves to the world? Like, do we put on a mask? Like if you're at home alone, you're different than you're at work. And I think I like those relationships contrast within yourself. Like why are we doing this? I'm included myself. I'm doing this myself. Like if I'm at work, I'm a different person than when I'm at home. But why?
Yeah, and I think it's also like a good topic in some way, because many people have an opinion about that nowadays, in the sense that we all have an opinion about what social media is doing to us or to our kids or to our family or anyone around us. And one thing I hear back very often is like, they go like, yeah, but people get this distorted image of reality where the people that you're watching are only showing the perfect kind of image from themselves and how fun it is or how great their lives is. But you never see what happens when the camera is off. So I think it's a good thing in that sense that everyone has an opinion about that subject, either from like investigating their own point of view, like their own life. But I think a lot of more people even have an opinion about it, about investigating like what they see other people doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's interesting that everyone has been in contact with it one way or another. So, yeah, I think it's nice to like put a mirror on everyone, like because like a funny example is like when you go into a train, like people are or reading a book or watching on their phone. And if they're watching on their phone, they are like on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, I don't know all of them, but like we are more interested in other people's lives than our own lives. So instead of like the few examples that are reading a book, investing in themselves and learning about a story or learn something new, they're gonna look how your neighbor's doing walking the dog or how your girlfriend is like doing something else. And I think that's quite interesting that it is that we are more interested in other people's lives than our own lives. So I think it's also a good lesson, like put the phone away, be present. Like when you're at a dinner table, like 9 out of 10 times there's a phone on the table and it's not in the hands and it's not, but it when it buzzes, like you see the faces go like, oh, what is it
Oh
about?
yeah, for
And
sure.
it's not that they're opening the phone. But it is like a Pavlov effect, like, okay, there's something buzzing. Oh, what is it? Like, oh, is it a message? Is it an email? Is it, what is it? Why is my phone going off?
But I think there were even like psychological researchers that showed that if the phone was like physically on the table, not even turned on, but just physically like in view, that the quality of conversation would be worse.
I can believe that.
You know, people just being more distracted, because I don't know if you have the same, but like I like to read books, but sometimes like there's a book and it just has like a difficult chapter and it's for me difficult to get through it. And then like I can see the phone in the corner of my eye, and even though I'm reading the book, like there's just attention, you know, like going to the phone. Like it's like burning there. Like there's a burning thing there, which is like a phone. They go, what the fuck, man?
It's like it's like the ring from Lord of the Rings. It's
Oh
like you have to have it. You need the phone. Yeah, exactly. But I think it's interesting, like all these subplots about the identity, like with the phone, who we are, why are we watching people, and like also into judging people, because that's also a topic I wanna like point out. Like we're very judgmental based to one another. And like why? Like do we have figured out life. No. Like, and then we don't even figure it out, but we are able to judge another person who's trying to do the same thing as we are, also figuring out life.
It's easy to point fingers, right?
It's very easy to point fingers, but that's why it's interesting. Like, why is it easy to point fingers? And why is it so
100%.
hard if we need to do something ourselves? Like, if it's easy to look like, oh, that guy in the gym, he looks so muscular, I want to be like that. But like, maybe he was a fat guy at the beginning, but he did go to the gym every single day and he did eat a salad every day for like 2 years, and now he became this. Not like he was born, it's not like he was born this way.
Yeah, but that's also interesting. Like there is like I think one of my favorite books, and I don't own it anymore, but it's called Mastery. And you have two types of books of Mastery. Like one of them is from Robert Greene. It's not that one, it's the other one. And I think it's from George Leonard, but I'm not sure. But what he says also is like that he talks about America, but he says like America, but you can say that the world is in war with mastery because people are so in love with the idea of being able to do something like with the end result of the mastery, but they're not in love with the journey it takes to get there, right? So they see someone maybe do magic like really proficiently, or they see someone like play the stars of the heaven with the piano and they go, oh, I want to be able to do that. And they can imagine themselves being there playing the piano like crazy and everyone adoring them. And then they get a piano and they start practicing it. And once they figure out, like, oh shit, this is actually really hard. Like that point, they just go like, oh no, this is not for me. It's too difficult. You know? So everyone is in love with the idea of like, I want that. I want to be able to play the piano, or I want to be that muscular guy at the gym. But not many people are willing to actually go through that journey to take all those steps to actually go there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, yeah, I like the way what you say about seeing the end result and not the journey. And I think the journey is more important than the end result. And also, like, we don't see that guy's setbacks. We only see, like, then we go to the Instagram and, like, the frame we see, we only see the frame of him being muscular, but we don't see him starving each day. We don't see him, like, I don't know what the setbacks are for that type of person because I'm not him, but he must have had setbacks. He must have difficulties in his life. Maybe he looks that way, but he's in depth. We don't know because I don't know him, but like I only see the picture of, ooh, I like the physical look of the guy. I want to be like him. And when I actually am him, I need to spend like 200, 300 euros a week on food because it's expensive. I need a gym membership to go every day. That's expensive. I need some powders or whatever to help the body to like rest or to gain more muscles. Like those spots are expensive. So I just see the image, but then when I realize, oh, what do I need to do for that? I'm not the type of guy who want to go every day to the gym. Like I'm lazy. I know, but so I know I cannot get that body he has, but I want it. It's not that I don't want it,
No, it's
but I
like
know myself.
if you would have a button that would be like half this body now, you're like whoop.
Yeah, exactly.
But you also realize like there goes a lot more through it, and there's more important things for you to do. So you would better do those things as opposed than to be in the gym for like 2 hours a day and to be watching all your calories, making meal plans, everything.
Yeah, I think that's difficult. Like, I think I can, I cannot like schedule like meal plans and stuff like that. I just want my food. Like, I don't want to calculate. I don't want to look at the back of every product. Like, ooh, if I combine this with this, then I'm over it. So, I can have this, but what else can I have? Like, I think for my life, I just want to go to the grocery store and just eat what I like.
Which is fair.
Yeah. But it's a different lifestyle.
Like I wonder, like you said you were going from back from your old job now back to well, your old job, I would say, like
My old job, yes.
yeah, like to consulting, because well, the people that don't know you, you're like a magic consultant, like you consult for television. In the Netherlands, for a pretty big show, and you've been with them for like many seasons, and you've created like, I think like New Year specials, like a series, and also like a, what else? Like, did you guys do like a movie type of thing, or?
No, we did some specials, like some New Year specials, and we have like the ongoing show that's like six episodes every week, like high time, prime time on the sh on TV. So just after the normally now it's we go on March, I think. But normally like we're after the holidays. Where like when everyone goes back to school, get back to their own rhythm, then we're on television on Saturday at 8:30, and in Holland that's the prime
Prime time.
time. And then it scores really good on prime time. So it's not like we're on prime time, but we're like at the top 20. Watch then though, we're always like third or fourth. And like the number one is always the news, so you can't almost beat
You can't
number
beat
one.
that, no.
No, like everyone watches the news, and then after that, the fight begins.
Do you feel like your experience consulting also helps you now with building your own show, or is that like a different thing, consulting for someone else and using that same creativity to work on your own material?
It helps in one extent, in the other one. Like you're your own worst critic. So even for me, when I write my own show, like I don't have, it's easier to do it for someone else, because you don't have your own opinions. You don't have your own things that holding you back. Because if someone says, invent this, make this, do this, then it's easier than when you do it for yourself, because then you say, invent this. And then the first question, but what if? And that's the first thing that pops into your mind or comes across. And I think that's really interesting, because you're holding yourself back. So I think it helps because you have a lot of experience. So I do know from experience what will work, what won't work. But it also holding me back, because it's for myself. So I just get my own opinion, like, oh, I don't like this, but maybe it's my own opinion. So maybe if I do it and everyone else likes it, I already get it off the table before it's even tested.
Do you also feel like to go back maybe even to your show in some way? Like, you know, like when you're designing for someone else, you very often sort of have their character in mind, of course, when you design something, I would assume, because the thing that you're designing needs to fit the person who you're designing it for. But do you feel like in that terms of like what fits the character is easier to apply on someone else than on yourself, because you know them in a different way than you know yourself?
I think the thing is, like, when you do it for yourself, you're probably gonna lie. And for the other person, like, I see who you are as who you are. And even if you express it differently or if you say it differently, what I see is what I see from you. When I see myself in a mirror, I'm gonna lie because I am better than I think I am. I look prettier than I think I am. Like, those are all the things I can say about myself or about my own thing that are gonna hold me back. And if I'm asking you or anyone else on the street, what do you think of me? There's gonna be a different result because that's the truth, because that's what someone else sees of me. And when I look at myself, I always will see the best version of myself. So I think it's easier to do for someone else something because I see them for who they really are. And I can say something else about that person and be right when they think it's wrong.
Yeah, so I guess you would also say then that designing for someone else, it's easier to design something based on the way that they project themselves towards the world rather than the way that they think they are projecting themselves towards the world, right? Because when you see it, there is not the person's own emotions mixed in with everything as they're having the experience. You just see the objective experience in as far as you can be objective, of course, but
Yeah.
you see it in a more objective sense than the other person who might have self-doubt about themselves or might have an ego complex.
Yeah, but we had the best experience we had with Bart, of course, with his mustache.
Oh yeah, for sure.
He had a mustache and he was growing it, and the first thing we both said is keep it. But he was like, no, I'm gonna take it off, blah, blah, blah. And we convinced him to keep it, and now still on this day, go to his Instagram, you will find him with a mustache.
You'll
He's
find
still
Barbara the
keeping it.
message.
Yeah, because the mustache made him better. It made him look better. It made him look more adult. It made him look better as a magician. So the mustache for him was a good thing, but he never could say to himself, "Ooh, I need to have this mustache," because he was in doubt with himself because he didn't want the mustache. Maybe he still doesn't want the mustache,
I
but
think
he
he's
knows it's
comfortable with
good.
it now, but it might be like a thing of like where you see yourself in the mirror every day and you're so used to like, oh, this fits within my character and this doesn't, right? And sometimes something fits you really well, but it's just really uncomfortable. Like with wearing new clothes, they also have this thing like I like to read like fashion bloggers sometimes because I like to think it's important to look good and to wear proper clothes, right? And also to wear what you like, but also to know sort of what fits together. And they also talk about like that some colors or some combinations, they look amazing. But when you see them for the first time, you go like, no, fuck no. Like, I'm not doing this. But that's just because when you see that, even though you recognize it looks good, you feel odd in it because you cannot see yourself within that frame. Because you never wear those things, so you're not used to it. But if you wear it like maybe for a day or 2 days or 3 days, you get more used to it. And you recognize like, oh damn, this really looks good. And I think that's the same with Bart. Like he couldn't recognize that he was like looking good like that. And I think that that mustache adds so much more personality to him, which as a magician is great because it automatically makes you more interesting. Like now he's a guy that's doing something. Why is he here? Rather than oh, this is just a kid. That's why is this kid here? Oh, he's doing card tricks. Oh, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, but he just with a simple thing like that, he just stepped up his game like 10 times. If he does the same trick, the same story, everything else, the mustache add. People want to listen, people take it more seriously. And it's just like just a small thing, but it makes such a big difference. And I think those are the things that are really interesting.
So where do you draw the line for your own magic in that, like other people telling you like what you should or shouldn't do?
Yeah, listen to your audience. That's always a really good one. And I think have like honest friends like yourself, and like I have other friends as well, who just can tell you the truth about effects, tricks, ideas, if they're good, if they're not good. And yeah, I also talk to like my girlfriend and other friends that are not magic based, and I'm also ask them, but not more of method, but more of like interesting topics, like what did they see a magic trick about. Like what do you think is interesting about XYZ? Doesn't matter the subject, but and of course, like yeah, I've been road tested like magic for years now. So I also know from my own point of view what will work or what will don't work just from experience. You know, it's not a trick, it's the performer. So and what works for me doesn't need to work for you and the other way around.
Definitely.
Like you can get you can get away with other tricks than I can get away with because we're not the same person. But I think it's interesting just to find those stuff out. And I think the best thing from experience is that you can know if something will work or not.
Like, I think one thing that I liked that I've been applying recently is like you have this music producer called Rick Rubin. And he said it, but I also heard other people say it. And they go like, when someone recommends something to them three times, but it needs to come from three different people, they will check it out, right? So, for example, I had this recently with a book from Benjamin Earl, like Inside Out. And when I first saw the book, I was like, I don't know. And then I had a buddy of mine message me, like sending me a PDF and like just talking straight up shit about the book. He's like, read it, it's so shit. Da, 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 da. And then, but then I had Mike, like Mike Vincent, message me, and he was like, I see him raving about the book. I'm like, okay, that already is interesting, right? Because my buddy is from Argentina, he's a really good magician. Mike is a great magician, and there's two really different opinions. So automatically, that's interesting to me because I go like, okay, so now it's not objectively shit anymore, you know? Now it's interesting and it's shit at the same time. So what is it? And then there was this other friend of mine that's just raving about the book, but not really having like his opinion. I didn't matter about care about so much, I guess. And then when I heard it the third time, like I saw it coming by again, I was like, okay, now I'm just gonna get the book, you know? Like, I didn't want to read the PDF. I was like, okay, if I'm gonna do this, I'm really gonna get the book. So I just got the book and I started reading it, and I was like, okay, this is actually interesting, this is good. And I've had the same thing with things in my library. Like, I've had books that I read the first time and I was like, what a piece of shit. Or not a piece of shit, but maybe it would be like, this book is okay. Like, it's not great, it's okay. And then I hear three other people just rave about that book and they go, maybe I missed something, you know? And you go, and I go back, and then sometimes it's either like, I still think it's not for me. But sometimes I go back to it and I go, oh my God, like I had this with LaPaul, for example. Like, the first time I read it, I was like, ah, it's okay. But now it's like the best book in the world to me, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's interesting, like what you say, because I am a strong believer that you need certain books at certain moments in your career or in your life. And like maybe the first time when you read it, it was not the moment you needed the book. And now you're at a certain point. Like if your first book is going to be Expert at the Card Table, it's going to be the most difficult shit ass book ever. But if you have like 20 years experience and you're going to pick up Expert at the Card Table, you think, oh, there's some interesting things in it.
Yeah, it was like my second book was Drawing Room Deceptions by Guy Hollingworth.
Good book.
Which right now I love. And back then, like, I loved the chapter about the twisting the aces, but anything else I couldn't do. I was like, no. But I also couldn't fully appreciate like all the stuff with the lateral palm and the calling the colors and the bottom deal and like he has that great false deal. If you seen that, like, is this great false dealing demo
I don't know.
where throughout dealing the cards, he's actually like he's doing that four times, false dealing in different ways, and through the way that he does it and cuts it, it's a false shuffle in itself, the whole dealing procedure, making you end up with the whole deck in order.
Oh, that's great.
I was like, fuck, that's amazing.
Yeah, but I think those things are interesting. Like now we can appreciate it, but if that's the first book or the second book you picked up, you're like, I don't even know how to what's mechanics grip. Like you're
Yeah,
just
that's
reading the
it.
first word, like,
But I
and
think
I
that's
think
the
that's
same thing
interesting.
with the shift, or the shift, the Inside Out from Benjamin Earl. Like, I think if I would have read that book at the moment that that buddy of mine recommended it to me, I would have thought it was a shit book. Because that book has like it has some really good stuff in there. That's one of the books that's not wildly original. Like, most of the methods are pretty well known. They're not crazily original or new or like an interesting, fascinating new thing to learn. Like, it's not like the Ernest Eric book, you know, Forces Unseen, where you go,
No.
oh my God, I can move cards like this, what the fuck? But it's he has really interesting concepts and he's focusing on the audience experience. So he has this one trick where he turns triumph into a game. But it's like a guessing game. It's like they're not participating in the sense that they're picking up cards and moving them, but they're guessing stuff about the position of the cards and the face up cards and the face down cards. And then what makes that so great is, first of all, it involves the audience way more mentally, because we tend to forget participation is not just touching something, it's also being mentally involved in something. Or it can just be being mentally involved in something. And then also, like, throughout the course of that whole thing, they are telling themselves more and more that the cards are face up and face down, because they're guessing it, confirming their own belief that there's now like 20 cards face up and the rest of the deck face down, you know? So then, once it's just that one card, especially then, people go, what?
Yeah, but I think it's nice because we as magician turns like mostly towards the method point of view because we're intrigued by it, but I think the stories are like more interesting than the method most of the time. And yeah, like I've had the complete journey of a magician from buying every crap trick to buying books and to be creating your own now. And now for me, it's like I'm at a moment where you're like searching for me now is making things make sense. Like, why am I showing you this? Why am I expressing this bit of magic with you at the moment? And I think it's interesting to flip it around. Like, what would the audience member actually want us to show them?
That's
So yeah, I'm
interesting.
in that stage of my life at the moment.
Well, yeah, like I've been doing something similar recently, because like I've also had that trail of thought where I went like, okay, so some people that start in Magic late, they're really lucky. Like, I mean, I started when I was 16, which is relatively late, but still not very late. But they're lucky in the sense that they can still remember their first memory of Magic and the first time that they had like the kind of experience, rather than just being stuck in methods and being like, oh, that's a thumb tip, that's a false shuffle, that's this, that's that. And the danger that you lead with the whole method thinking is that some very simple things, which you and I both know, can be very beautiful and powerful, like just a top change of a card in their hands, can be super strong. But we tend to forget that, and we want to do some difficult shit where we DPS the card out of the deck and give them the deck to shuffle them and then take it back, and then through then we like then we like we bottom deal the card to change it, to switch it, and then the top card is now their card. But and that's not to say that you shouldn't learn difficult techniques, but it's more to say we tend to forget what the effect is and what the audience is experiencing of the effect. So what I started to do recently is like I'm taking an effect, and I'm just like the Biddle trick, for example, and I'm first writing down, okay, what is the effect? Like, what is the audience perceiving? I don't want to think like, oh, I'm doing this move, this false shuffle, then do the Biddle move, then I use this technique and that technique and that technique to get there, and then I do this, and then ta-da, Biddle trick. But I want to think, okay, what's the effect to them? And like, you should just make a list of all the possible effects it could be. Like, oh, maybe it's teleportation, or maybe it's me just moving faster than light to move a card from one packet to another, or maybe I'm stopping time, and then that's the thing that they're experiencing. Which, in all those senses, they would be experiencing teleportation, but the story around that could be different, right? But then once I got that, so I go, okay, it's the effect, it's a teleportation of a card to one packet to another. Okay, so now I know what makes this thing really amazing and impossible, because in the natural world, something shouldn't just go boop, it's there, you go, like, if you would see a person walking on the street and they would just like be here and 1 second later just be there, you're like, wait, what? You're like, I think you would flip out for a bit.
I think so too.
So that's what makes that thing amazing. So now that I got that, then I write down, okay, so now what conditions do I need to clarify what makes it amazing, right? To make sure that it can be as amazing as possible And it's clearly that. And then with the beta trick, I think like an important thing would be like a free selection. Like they need to have at least a feeling, even if it's not at least a feeling that they could have chosen any card and that any card could have teleported. And then, of course, they need to have also the feeling that their card is in the packet with five cards or four cards or whatever until the very last moment before it teleports. And ideally, I even want them to see it or feel it teleport as well. And then ideally to a chosen location or to their hand, you know? Because I think it's already stronger if they're holding onto the deck or the deck is on the table. It's stronger if they're holding onto it because it means I could manipulate less. So in that sense, like I'm turning it around a bit now, where I'm first looking at what is the effect that they're experiencing, and then now what methods and subtleties can I use to make that effect stronger and more clear.
Yeah, but that's a good starting point of doing that because you're now looking at what do they perceive from the effect instead of like, look, I'm mumbo jumboing around and now it happens.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So I think the best description, I heard Chris Ramsey talked about this when you see a duck on the water, like when you see the duck, it smoothly goes from one side to the other side, but underneath you see all this happening. So, and I think a magic trick should be like that. Like on the surface, it should go smooth from A to B, and underneath the things we don't see, we can do whatever we want.
It reminds me of this thing. Like I once got this random gift from Vanishing Ink, and it was a booklet from Benjamin Earl called Real Magic. And in that booklet, he talks about how magic is real. And the point he makes, sort of, or at least the way I interpret his point, which makes perfect sense, is that we interpret the world by our senses. And we interpret what is possible and impossible by those same senses, right? So in some way, if I'm able to show you something and you don't know the means of it and you don't see the means of it, but you only see the end result of it, that is magic. Then you created the real magic.
Yeah,
And that's that
that
same
makes sense.
thing. And there's toolkits to achieve that real magic.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, I think that this thing now is like, what do you want to perceive? Like, what do you want to tell or leave the audience with? And I think that's should be your starting point, and then figuring out. Okay, how am I gonna get there?
But do you
Because
think
your
that should
method
always be a
is.
starting point? Like do you think that would differ for a show or for like a trick you're gonna learn from walk around? Let's say, for example.
Yeah, no, I think it should be both because like if you only do coin tricks and you want to learn the next coin trick, why shouldn't you learn a card trick instead to break the pattern? So I think in a whole way, I think it's for both really interesting. I think for a show, it's more easy to start with the story and then fill in the tricks. But yeah, I think also for walk around, like magic should be fun and you should do the things you want to like. So if you really like a trick, then try to find the story because I believe you can fit in every trick in your walk around sets if you just adjust the story. And yeah, if you really like a particular trick, yeah, put it in there and perform it, but don't perform it with a pattern from the book, but make it make sense for you.
Super funny that you say that because I was reading the Fernand biography by David Benn, and like Fernand, like there's the chapter in there where he fooled Houdini, you know, because this Fernand is also known as like Die Fernand, the man that fooled Houdini. But also at one point when he was doing like walk around performances in hotels, he would at one point show them that trick and then with that story, and he noticed like how people got super interested when he told that story. And then he started to experiment with like, okay, but what happens if I tell them the same story but do a different trick? And he noticed that people were still as interested in it. So that's interesting in some way, because I guess that there are some stories or like hooks that allow you to do multiple tricks, right?
Yeah, but it's the same. Like if you do cards across or you do coins across, the effect is the same, but the whole feeling and the whole meaning of it can be completely different.
Exactly.
And but you can do it also the other way around. Like I can still tell the story from coins across with my cards across, or I can tell my cards across with my coins across story. It doesn't matter. But like it's just what do you want to get out of it? How do you want people to see you? Like, do you want to see as the magician? Do you want to see as the gambler? Do you want to see as the coin guy? Like, it all depends on like, do you do a trick or do you do a miracle? Like, I can do the same trick as my grandpa could have done. But for my grandpa, it's a trick, and for me, it could be a miracle, like for the same audience. So, the way I tell the story, the way I perform the trick, the way I know the beats of the trick, it could differ from, oh, look, there's cute Bart with no mustache, of like, oh, there's Bart with a mustache.
Yeah, it's like the way that you dress the monkey.
Yeah. And that's what you also said, like the top change in your hands could be wonderful. Well, I never perform a top change. So if I do the same trick as you do, they probably telegraph the move. They know I do the move at the wrong moment, probably. So I think that differs from person to person. And you like the top change, but I do a double lift to achieve the same outcome. And yeah, from my experience, this works, and from your experience, that works. And neither of them is right, and neither of them is wrong.
So, but then I'm also seeing, like, I'm also sensing, like you're saying, you should also find like an authentic thing that's you, right?
I think you need to be yourself, and of course, but also an extension of yourself. When you perform, so you're not like, I don't see myself performing as another person, because then I'm acting and not performing magic. So other people are already great at that. They take acting classes and they could be a whole different persona from who they are on stage as they are normal. But for me, like I am known in the magic community as the rubber band guy because I did a trick, it sold really well, and now everyone in the community knows me as the rubber band guy. But I'm just more than rubber bands. But
Goes home
because
crying in the corner every evening, like I'm more than just a rubber band guy, guys.
yes. No, but it's funny because that's the first thing I released. It was a well-received release, and then you known as the expert of rubber bands, and people gonna ask me about stuff I really don't know because I only did one trick of rubber bands. Of course, now I can perform other rubber band tricks, but before that, I only performed with cards, coins, and no rubber bands at all. I only did the crazy man handcuffs just like everyone else. But it's interesting because the community sees me as this person, then I'm actually not.
But then what you
Because
also said, because I've seen you
people.
perform more with rubber bands now, that also that view of the community has pushed you to learn more stuff with rubber bands.
No, because I think rubber bands, the for me, when I create a magic trick, it's all about the puzzle. Like, I want to solve the puzzle. Like I have a solution in my head, or I have a trick I want to go with, and I need to solve it. So, and I won't rest until it's solved. And with that particular trick, it was the same thing. Like there was an effect out. I was not happy with it, and I wanted to make it different. I wanted to make it better, and I did. So it for me at that point, it was just a puzzle to
Mm-hmm.
solve the trick for my own needs. And then after that, you realize like, oh, if I can benefit from it, for me, it's like my own magic page and everything I do for myself is just because I want to share. Like, I'm not making profits. Of course, if you buy a trick, I will get the money, but it's not like it will make me a fortune. But for me, it's like I want to share the things I create because I think if I put it out there, someone else can pick it up, someone else can make it even better. Like I'm not the end station of this of the story of the trick to told. I'm just somewhere in the middle or somewhere even at the beginning
Oh yeah.
to expand on the whole theme of that trick. And that's why why I put things out there. Like I want other people to benefit from it just how I benefit from it. So I think that's interesting for a trick based.
Yeah, and I also think like your stuff is not like terribly expensive. Like I think like Crazy Man, what was it like Lazy Man, what was the name of the trick
Lazy
again?
man's penetrations.
Yeah,
Yes.
Lazy Man's penetration, like it was like 10 euros or something, 10, 15. So that's definitely not terribly expensive. It's still like very doable. And also I think like you took out your time to create all those different methods. You sit down to record them and then people can even approach you and ask you questions about it once they get it. So I think it's really like a good price for it. Plus, people
Yeah,
also
but
tend to appreciate things more when they pay for it.
For me, like when you say it, like I have done the crazy man's penetrations, like it's the 2.0, because like when I released it, after I released it, I sat down at Fabiano, like a restaurant with my girlfriend. And one, I was performing it with a spoon, like I was in the face, like, oh, with what item can I do the trick? And the rubber band broke on me, and I didn't have any rubber bands with me. And I still wanted the video. So my girlfriend said, like, oh, tie a knot in it, or do it with just the single string. Can you not do it with the single string? And I just sat there in the restaurant, figuring it out how to do it with a single string. So after 5 minutes from a whole trick, I could do it with a single string because I had experience, of course. But after that, like my whole brain exploded with opportunities. Ooh, what if I did it with two rubber bands? Ooh, what if I did it with two and it looks like one? Like my whole brain went exploring all the possibilities. And I figured out a faster method to get into the whole setup. And then I released it, and like everybody got a hate, like, oh, you want to make more money, and you want to make this, and you want to make that. And I was like, no, buy or one or the other. Like, it doesn't matter to me. And if you have the first one and you really love it, you really gonna love the second. Like, because it's an upgrade, like, but it's not like
Yeah.
a small upgrade.
Yeah, but it
And I
wasn't
think
even
that's
like
difficult.
you're releasing the same download again. It's like with video games, like you can buy a DLC package, you know. It's kind of like that.
Exactly. But in the Magic community, everyone got hate from it because they thought I would make more money. But for me, it's like, no, in half a year time, I experienced all these effects. With the same method, the method became better, the effects became better. Like I figured it, the first thing was just through the 1-2 rubber band, that's it. And after that, there were 14 effects, 14 new effects, and a better method, better visuals, how to do it with the spectator themselves. So, like, it was an upgrade, like you say, like a DLC. Like to the max, and then you'll get so much hate from the community. Like it's already out there. Why did company bought it? And like you get so much headache just because you want to share.
Well, what goes through you when you experience that?
Like a little bit of disappointment from the people because people don't understand, like also for the second part, what you said. I said 2 days filming it. I went a long day with my girlfriend filming the trailer. It was like from I think 9 in the morning till 6 in the evening, like 9 hours straight. No breaks. We just kept from location to location, filming, doing stuff, filming it again, getting into fun trouble, to just getting the whole to get everything on film. And then I think it's a little bit sad that when you just wanna share magic, that people that you just gotta get hate messages, like it's already out there. They just want to make a profit from it. Like people only see what they want to see, and don't see the real reason behind it.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, and I suppose it can also be frustrating.
No, yeah, for me it's like people like I don't make any money from the second one because I just got a buyout. So when I recommend my own trick, it's not that I get benefits from it. So it's the luxury position that I can rave about my own project without getting myself get better from it.
Exactly.
So if I'm gonna recommend it, I'm really recommend it because it do is a better trick. It do is a better effect. Just because the outcome is the same, it doesn't mean that the insight or the method is like the method is different.
Yeah, but
So
it's kind of even like if you would compare a trick from where someone does a trick for you, but they know how to do a half pass, right? So they know how to reverse the bottom card to front of you, and they reverse the whole deck. While you are looking at the card, you put it back, then the card is reversed. Or someone is doing that same trick, but they have to have the deck behind their back, and they reverse the bottom card and then put it back. And if you pick a card to put it behind your back again and flip over the whole deck, and if you put the thing back and then put it behind your back again, throwing off one card, and then it's either that or you know how to do the half pass and sneakily reverse the deck so that when they put the card back, it's reversed. And then you sneakily reverse the deck again into that, it's reversed, like the method with the half pass is so much better, even though you're achieving the same effect. And I feel that's the same thing with your thing. Like the setup is just so much more efficient. It's so much quicker, you can do
exactly.
more things with it. So you've improved the thing. You were like, okay, I've improved this. I found out I can do more stuff with this. You were very clear. This stuff works for real life. This stuff only works for social media, which also already is like props to you because many people just release shit and it goes like, you can do it. And then the real life example was, yeah, well, you can do it, but you need to set up a 5 minutes and then you can just do it for two people.
Exactly. Yeah, but for me, like besides the rubber band effects, like everything I release, I just want to be completely open about it, what it is, what you get, how it looks like. And yeah, still you're gonna get haters and I don't mind. But like for me, I just want to be transparent to everyone. Like what you see is what you get. There are no like mysteries or things like that will surprise you when you get the effect. So for me, it's like if you like what you see, you're more happy to when you see the download. And it's not like because I've been disappointed myself more than enough times buying a magic trick when they promise me the universe and I only get a rock.
Not even a rock, usually.
A little bit of dust.
A grain of sand.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm coming from the same point of view as every other magician in the world. So for me, the thing that was clear from the beginning, like even on my Instagram, all my videos, like everything what you see is like no edits, no cuts, no everything is real time. and all the things I do on Instagram, I probably could do live as well. It's just I choose not to do because I have my own sets that I perform what I do like. But yeah, that's for me, the I just want to be real and not like, oh, it's a stripper deck, but I just call it differently. I do a different trick with it and resell the stripper deck again, for example, or a rough and smooth deck.
Yeah, I think the Magic community in some way kind of got screwed over by that, in the sense that there is a lot of that going on though. Like what people accused you of, like there's many tricks just being resolved that people go, oh, it's the newest trick, the most revolutionary principle, it's gonna revolutionize the way that you do magic forever. And it's crazy, no one ever came up with it before. And I go, well, people did. It's actually in the Inferno Chronicles, which was released in that year, like 1900 something, you know, where it goes like, well, actually, it's an expert card technique, you know, like stuff like that gets pulled so often where people are hyping something up so much, you go, well, it's like with that trick from Juan Carlos with the heartbeat. Like, I think it's a beautiful trick, but it's in an old magic book, you know, not exactly the same way that you do it, but the method essentially is in a new magic book. And I can get how people are reacting to it because he does it really beautifully. And the way in the old book it wasn't written down like that. Like in some way it was, but it was written more down to make the turn the table into a ghost. So you would knock on the table twice with the penny, you would back a few seconds later. Which is also cool. So it was a sound effect and it's like a feeling effect. So we changed up the effect a bit. But still, like many things are being sold and hyped so much, and then in the end, they're like already existing.
Yeah, but I think it's what you said, the way it's sold. Like, I don't mind buying his trick knowing it's already a method that exists, but what you say, they sold it as a new method, new exploration, everything. And then the first people who got Tarbell, I think it was him,
It's in Tarbell.
and then people took a picture and said it's already out there. And then it's like getting friction from everyone, like they're saying it's a new method, they say it's already out there, instead of from a method from Tarbell, we found a new presentation, better blue, whatever. And then I think you can get away with it because I did the same thing. Because my trick, but my rubber band trick is not original, it's from Break and Fire. And I say it's from Break and Fire, and I don't hide it's that it is, but I just he just had a little gem. In one of his projects, I saw that gem and I just run away with it. And I asked his permission before releasing it. I went to Bacon. I said, I saw your trick. I saw the potential and I expanded it so much further than you could ever dream of. Can I release it? And I had his blessing. If he said, no, it's my trick, then I would never release it. But he says, it's okay, it's cool. And it's the first thing in the download you hear that it's an effect from Bacon Fire, where the ID comes from or where the expansion comes from. And I think if they did that with the pencil, they just sold the presentation or sold whatever it was better for, then I think nobody would get upset. But yeah, and we both know the company that's doing it, but they are all for controversy. So the more attention they get, the more they get sold.
Yeah, but also maybe in some way, like I'm wondering if they're just like afraid of like what that truth could bring to them, because then you're just selling a presentation, right? So, but how do you sell that? Like, and especially like on a video, like how do you sell the presentation as a standalone product? So maybe they're also afraid in some sense, like if they don't sell it as something new, that no one is going to buy it, because also the magic community is kind of known, at least some parts of it, to be unethical and to be downloading and pirating stuff.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I think with that's happening. But also, like, we shouldn't hide it as a problem for to hide the stuff. Like we just need to think in creative ways to sell gimmicks or, but like what you said, like everything is old method, everything is in books. So just buy a book instead, or release a book instead of like it's way harder to pirate a book than to pirate a video.
Plus, now I'm more read it because if you want to hide something, just put it in print, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, all the but yeah, the magic also the magic scene is also like, oh, we need the greatest stuff, we need the newest stuff, like, but everything is already out there. You just need to figure out for yourself what you want and buy more specific to that. Like save up some money and buy some nice coins from Skullcraft or whoever, that will serve you a lifetime of effects. Then buy each week the newest release for like 10 euros for a year, that are gonna leave in your bottom drawer because you're gonna get disappointed by it.
Yeah, plus, like, I also think that circles back to what we were talking about earlier is that people tend not to think that they're going to become a better magician by buying more tricks, even though it's just like old stuff and methods just being recycled and recycled over and over and over again. But in the end, like, what makes you a better magician is, of course, like having basics down. Like, always go back to the basics. That always makes you better. But we're not talking about that, like, circling back to the beginning. It's like what makes you really better is just working out how to present something in an interesting and entertaining manner while not sacrificing the purity of the method.
Yeah. Now, then to note on this, like I was like always thinking about effects, thinking about things, and for me it's like context, and also with tricks, like what tricks do we perform in certain areas, and what's the context of the trick, and I'm always trying to find out reason why an audience member should care about the props we're having. Like, why do we have cars with us in a day-to-day basis? It's like we like to practice. Of course, we have cars with it, but for someone else, it's really weird to have cars with them. Yeah, like if someone is going out of the street and someone's coming up to you and they just get some wool and needles and they're gonna pick it out of your pockets, can I show you something, and they're just gonna knit in front of you, you're like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, because it's so much out of context. Like it's probably a really nice person, what they can do is probably really amazing, but when someone pulls out some things and some wool and they're just gonna knit in front of you're like, what the hell are you doing? And it's just the context. And for that same reason, it's like I created a professor's nightmare without ropes. So it's the same effect, it's the same thing, it's with laces. I have a complete story about it. But it makes sense. The story makes sense. And if I pull out the laces, everyone will say, oh, that makes so much sense. Instead of like, oh, I have a rope with it. Why does this guy have a rope on him? Like, it makes it for me, what I like the most is to take the question out of the prop. So if I come out on the street and I take out my wallet, it makes sense. So there's no question, why does he have a wallet? But if I take out a rope, the first question is, why is there a rope? And I don't want the question, why is there a rope?
That's fair, but wouldn't you say in some sense, like if you establish that you're a magician and this would be very situational bound, right? But like let's say you're meeting someone in a cafe or in a bar, and they go, oh, what are you doing? You go, I'm a magician, and then there's, oh, can I see something? You go, sure. You pull out a deck of cards. Like, I don't necessarily think that would be that weird, right? Because like people associate cards with a magician.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be more interesting if we just found a way, like, oh, you're a magician, and then you're searching and said, oh, if I only have a deck of cards, let's imagine I have a deck of cards. And then you go into your presentation with an imaginary deck. And then from the imaginary deck, you just do whatever thing and you make it appear. So it comes from nowhere. I think it's a way more interesting approach than, look, I have a deck of cards. Instead of you're looking like, I don't have any, but wait. Instead of using a deck of cards, we can imagine a deck of cards. Like if I'm holding it in my hand and I just open the lid up, take the cards out, and yeah, this looks like shuffling. Like this looks like fancy shuffling. And you give them a shuffle and you get it back. Okay, you select the card, whatever. Let's, for example, they take a card, reverse it, and you do the invisible deck and the cards reverse. But you can do it like, okay, so you shuffled in blah, blah, blah. And let's take this and make it into reality. And you just have the thing here and you just make it into reality, whatever. And then say, oh, but look, you shuffled, I shuffled. And the most interesting part is, and you take the deck out, this is the order the cards are in. And from this point, let's say you're culling the aces or whatever, and do a spectator cuts the aces from there. So you establish your magician from nowhere. Instead, you have a deck of cards. But the question where that deck comes from is now irrelevant because you made from something in their mind, from the imaginary to the reality.
That's fair.
And I think it's a really interesting point. Like, if you're a magician, why would you go to a card trick instead of like, ooh, I have some pocket change. Ooh, name a number between 1 and 100. Oh, that's the exact amount. Oh, that's strange. You know what else is strange? Or like, if you put this in any card, any number, and you say like, ooh, I'm a magician. I have a deck of cards in my pocket. But you know what's really interesting? Before I came here, I knew I met you, and I shuffled the deck of cards, and I placed one specific card at one specific number. But it's tailored to you. And now they know you have a deck of cards with you. So when you take it out of your pocket, it's not that of a weird context anymore. And you have their names card at the number predicted ahead of time. For example, it's just like a simple example. I think that's way more interesting that things just come out of nowhere, or that it makes sense that it comes out there. And whatever you can do with your cars, you can probably do with your bank cards or with train tickets or with whatever. And if I'm in a bar and I say, oh, look, I got a train ticket because I came over here, it makes sense. Everyone has train tickets or things in their pocket like that. And it would be better if you planted the deck at the bar and you say, oh, I would really love to show you, but I don't have a deck. Maybe the bartender has one. You just go to the toilet, say to the bartender, put this behind your deck. I will ask it for in a second. And then the deck comes from the barkeeper. But yeah, it's
Yeah,
a point of
definitely.
view. It's not right or wrong. It's just how I see it. If you
I
just want to pick a
think
deck of cards out of your pocket, it's okay.
it would I think it would definitely make it more organic in some way.
Yeah, I think it's the like the stereotypical thing just to get assuming we have cards with us, or I think it's even a different context if you're sitting on a table practicing and somebody comes to you and say, oh, what are you doing? Because you're already out there, you're already practicing, and they come to you. So if you're practicing riffle stacking or false shuffles or whatever at a table, and someone else says, ooh, what are you doing? And you say, please sit down, then I will show you instead of tell you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it from a point of view where I'm doing like a stay like a parlor show or walk around show. And like even though in those situations like it would be interesting to do what you're saying, like I do think it's not necessarily out of place or weird to have a deck of cards with you or anything else, because usually I'm there, I introduce myself as a magician and I'm letting know that the company that they work for want to take care of the people there and that they paid me my good money for it. And then like to sh then show them something with cards in that context makes sense, you know, because the company paid me to be there and to have my tools with me. Like you would expect. What do you call it? Like a carpenter to have his tools with him when he comes to fix your house. You know, so in that same sense, like I would have my tools with me as a magician when the company asked me to entertain their guest. But
Of course.
yeah, but I do think indeed, like when you are not working, so to say, that it's interesting to think about how can I make this more organic or original. Because also, like, even if you don't announce that you're a magician, but you do something magical and people are not expecting it, but with an ordinary object, it's insane, you know?
Yeah, of course. But what you say, it also makes sense. And I think even on a further extent, like when you're performing on stage, you have more of that freedom to bring whatever you want. Because, but like it's like if I have like if I go to a death metal concert and I wear pink, like it's weird. It doesn't fit. So, and I think we just should think more about those kind of things. Like the same thing, like if you wear all black, and you have like the most pink ring ever, it doesn't fit your persona. It doesn't fit the whole context of the thing.
That's fair,
But
yeah.
it's just my point of view. If you want to take a deck of cards out of the when you're in a bar, you should definitely do that. But it's not that like it's not like now I'm not doing that either. But I think it should be interesting from a point of view if we really do magic, like why don't we make a deck appear? Or like why don't we make the things we need to appear?
Yeah, but then that also like already brings the question like what is doing real magic, right? Like what does that imply? What is that really? Because I also think in some sense like there's different definitions of magic. Like some people think like Harry Potter kind of magic. But my definition of magic is going more and more towards like creating the illusion of magic, which in its sense is real magic because you create the feeling, but it's like about creating that feeling, which is created through difficult tools and through sleight of hand and through psychology, storytelling, and the creating an atmosphere in which that is alive. So, and I think both those things can do that. And then that's also good, why it's good that you say it's not one thing is not right and the other is wrong, but it's rather like, hey, this is an interesting thought experiment. See if it fits your style. See if it fits you as a persona and as a performer. How would you do this thing in an organic way? And maybe like what you did also, like you go like, okay, you know, maybe you want to do a cards across, but you don't want to have cards, but maybe you have 10 train tickets in your wallet. Because you go to a train often and you forget to take them out. Like it wouldn't be a weird thing to have like multiple receipts or train tickets in your wallet because so many people are used to just getting a train ticket, checking in, checking out, putting the thing back in your wallet and just going and then just doing that every day until at one point at the end of the week you go, oh fuck, I have a lot of train tickets. Let me throw those away.
Yeah, but then the interesting question is, like, is the same trick stronger with a different prop because it feels more organic than when I take a deck of cards out of my pocket?
I'm not sure if for that sense the deck of cards is a good example. But that is more because a
What
deck
if
of
it
cards, but it's more because a deck of cards is like relatable in some sense, and it's something that everyone knows what it is, right?
That's true. But if I go to a bar and I take out like if say someone says, "Oh, you're a magician," and then I say, "Oh, I think I have something," and I take out my wallets and say, "Oh, here are some train tickets. Let's use these," and I do the cards across with train tickets. Or someone says like, "Oh, show me a trick." I take, "Oh, wait, I have a deck of cards with me," and then the first question is, "Do you have it always with you?" And then I say, "Huh, no," and then I take the deck of cards out, and then I perform the exact same trick. So the only thing that changed is the props. But would it be better if it's with train tickets or if it's with a deck of cards? And I think that's an interesting question.
Definitely, but I think that would also depend on the performer, because I think, for example, when performing it, I could get a stronger reaction with the cards and maybe you with the train tickets, you know? Because also, like, what fits you, what you're comfortable with, what feels organic to you. But also, of course, like, how you frame the train tickets. Like if you would go, like, okay, let's try this out. Let me just get my cards. And you look in your back and you can't find them. You go, fuck. Seem to forgot those. And then, oh, well, maybe this works. I don't know. But maybe we just use some train tickets. You know, like, in a sense, like, oh, you forgot your cards. Now you're using your train tickets. And then still create a miracle. Like maybe that's interesting as well, because now you're like solving a problem. You're giving them the experience like they're seeing something that's happening once, because usually it wouldn't.
Yeah, but I think it's also interesting, like, you and I hold decks of cards every day. We know what they feel, we know what they look. Like, the general audience knows what a deck of cards looks like, what it probably feels like. But a train ticket, everybody, almost everybody holds it in their hands, have hold, known what it is. And I think it's interesting that even you and I know that we can gimmick a train ticket. It's far less likely that the train ticket is gimmicked than a deck of cards is gimmicked.
So that it's more like the feeling of a borrowed object?
I think so. Even if it comes from me, I think a train ticket is more organic, more known than, like, in my perspective, a train ticket is a train ticket, and a deck of cards is from me, from the magician. And, like, for example, the deck of cards is from the magician, and the train ticket is from Danny. Danny put out some train tickets.
But then what if we borrow a deck of cards from the bar?
Yeah, but then it's like Danny borrowed a deck from the bartender and did some amazing stuff. I think it's a different context than, like, it's not from us. And even though the train tickets came out of our pocket, it's still not ours, because they know you only can get a train ticket if you go to the Jellens machines, put in the thing and the destination, and then you get a train ticket. You cannot buy a train ticket on eBay. You cannot buy a train ticket on anywhere else except from those places. So it's the same thing. Money comes from a money machine. You cannot get money anywhere else. So if I do a miracle with money, they know and the feel of money. And I think with, like, things out of context. So we have a deck of cards, but what if we bring SpongeBob into the mix? Like, if I come there and someone shows you, say, oh, let me show you something, and then you come out with two SpongeBob, like, what the hell are those? Like, I don't understand. Even I don't understand what they are. And
does anyone really?
No, exactly. But of course, I think SpongeBob are a great effect. But what are SpongeBob?
Yeah.
Like, of course, no matter, the trick is wonderful. The prop is wonderful. But what is a SpongeBob? I've never seen a SpongeBob beside magician's pockets. So you need to find a really good reason to introduce those things.
I'm also wondering if, from that context, like, tricks with money is becoming less strong.
Yeah, because, exactly.
Because nowadays, like, we're using more and more our credit cards and our Apple Pay or phones to pay, rather than having physical cash on us or coins. Like, even if you want to do certain coin tricks, I find it difficult sometimes, or bill change, to find people with cash.
Exactly. But the context changed because, like, we as humanity evolved from trading stuff to buying stuff, and now to buy stuff with money, we buy stuff with our phones and with our credit cards. So you better can do a trick with their credit cards than do a trick with money.
I don't know where I heard this from. I think it's from I think I heard it from Aliash, but I'm not sure. Like, I think he was telling me like when to use like euro coins, like if you're in Europe, and when you could use like a coins, when you could use like a shell set, for example, for coins across. And like the argument was more like if you're doing any physical change to the money, it would be good to use actual euro coins, like you're doing a coin band, or you're doing a karate coin, right? Or you're but even if you're changing like a spellbound routine, kind of type of stuff. Like it would be better to use euro coin. But if they go across, then it's fine to use those other coins because they're more like objects going across rather than and the object itself changing. So they're like there's a lesser likability of the object being gimmicked, you know?
Yeah, of course, but it doesn't matter because with the other thing, like with across, the numbers are more important than the coins. And that's why
Exactly.
I think you can get away with it. And with a spellbound, if you change your dollar to a Chinese coin, like, okay, you need to have a nice, of course, you can get away with it, but I think it's nice that people understand the props we're using, they're also using in day life. So I think it's nicer if I walk through a rope or I walk through a lace or something. I take my lace out of my shoe, I have two people hold it and I walk through it. Or I take out of my backpack a really long piece of rope, you hold this and you hold that end. Then I think it's stronger if I just untie my lace in front of them, have them both hold an end and walk through it. Because
But I think
everyone
it also
understands.
depends on the context, right? Because like if you're in front of a theater or you're waiting for something and there's this rope, these two poles with the rope, and you just walk straight through it, and then at the
Yeah,
same
but
time,
that's, I
then
think that's nice. Of course, but that's what you say, the context is good. But if you go into a bar and you bring out two of those poles and you bring those red ribbon in between and you're gonna do the trick, you're gonna think like, what the hell is he doing with those things? Of course he can do that because he brought them with him.
Yeah, but then in some sense, like the whole argument of like what's better, more organic or whatever, really depends on the context of everything. Whereas a lot of people are very often saying it, no, real money, like euro coins, is better than dollars in Europe because people know what the fuck they are. And I go, but still depends on the effect, you know? And where you are, I guess, also. But it's the same thing with this. Like, yeah, your shoelaces make way more sense if you're just on the street and you go, well, let me do this. Like, it's already interesting. Like, wait, why is this guy unlacing his shoe in the middle of the street? Like, what's going on? And then when you do something with them, it's like, oh shit. But like, they know what they are, right? As opposed to you taking like this big bundle of porno rope out of your bag, and you go like, "Hey guys, I just came back from my girlfriend's place. Giggity, giggity, giggity. Now let me
Exactly.
show you this
Yeah.
magic trick."
Exactly. Yeah, but even in the extent with the deck of cards, when you say like if you come out and say like, okay, you all know that I'm a magician and you know that every magician has a deck of cards with him, so do I. But what I want you to do as an audience, like confirm this is the most normal deck on earth there is. If you find anything, any markings, anything, please let me know because then I can take advantage of it. So then you flip the whole story on its side because you know they expect you have cards with them, and now you give the cards to them. Okay, mix them, shuffle them, whatever, make sure they are the normalest cards as they can be, and then do a miracle with them.
Yeah, but doesn't like saying that something is normal already apply that it could also be abnormal?
Yeah, but they don't know. But if you don't, if you perform tricks in context with, like, I only perform tricks where there's relatively a normal deck of cards. When I have like 52 cards, I rarely perform with gimmicks or a prop deck or whatever. So if I perform a trick that is gimmicked, I only perform the trick that is gimmicked in a certain context. So like you won't fight me in a deck of cards with duplicates, with marked cards, with anything. I just learned myself the classical ways by palming, by those methods to do the effects I want to achieve. So I can achieve everything everywhere I want. So for me, if I give a deck to the participant and say, you probably heard of marked cards, these are my cards, I want you to check them, that you're satisfied that this is as normal as a deck as it could be. For me, for my character, that's fine. But if you have like an invisible deck and then you're gonna do a Svengali and stuff like that, you should not tell that story because you cannot get away with it. Because you first gonna give them a deck, they can examine, you put the deck away, they have a different deck. Can we also examine this deck? No.
No, but I guess also like it's a bit of a different context and a different story that you're telling with it, because like very often, even with the invisible, people go like, look, a normal deck of cards, right? Yes, great. Deck is very normal. Now, rather than going, here, look at the cards. Like, just make sure that they're all normal. There's no doubles. They're not marked. There's no weird
Yeah,
things within this deck.
I know Gregory Wilson has a nice presentation where he just do this stuff and then he says that there are special things in the deck. So he does a really big spring and then he says, yeah, that's because of the string that's woven inside of the deck, and I can do this because yeah, it's especially like this, and I can perform this because this of the deck. And then it's getting more absurd and absurd until someone says, that's just a normal deck of cards, you know? And then he says, oh, you're sure? And then check it out. And then I think it's nice to just go to the all the way absurd. And then they are gonna confirm, no, it's just a normal deck of cards, you're just good.
I think it would be super funny to like have this presentation and this is just a normal deck of cards, you can check it out, like whatever, and then give them just an electric deck.
Yes, that would be
What the
funny.
fuck? Like you give it to them like this, like you just hand them like one card and the whole deck is like dangling under it.
That's nice. But what you also could do is, like, if you think of, like, if you just see a jacket hanging, you just place your deck in the jacket from the spectator. And you just say, like, oh, sorry, you want me to show something? Yeah, normally I have a deck of cards with me, but not now. Can I borrow yours? You probably have one in your jacket. And then they say no, and then you say, yeah, but please double check. Maybe you still have one with them, but you forgot about it. And then you already have your first effect. Like, for no reason, you're just created an extra effect. Like, no, I don't have a deck of cards. Please just double check it. And then, of course, they will double check it, and they feel like a deck of cards. And then they are amazed, and then you say, oh, great deck of cards, and you just grab it out of their hands and you're just opening it and give them the box back. Oh, this is great, these look fantastic, these look exactly the ones I have. Like, you can make a joke out of it.
I think there's also this one really evil thing that like one of the I don't remember the guy's name, but it's a magician, he used to do this at conventions and lectures. Like he would just plant random decks of cards like under seats of magicians. And then he would literally just like be like, okay, we need like a stack or something, right? That we need deck of cards for this. And he goes like, can I borrow those? And just takes his own deck from the floor that he has planted there beforehand. And he goes, oh yeah, sure, you know, because it would be normal for the deck to be there. And then just goes into the trick.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Fritz also does a nice thing at conventions, huh?
Am I finally free, Danny?
What?
Am I finally free? Yeah. Fritz does this thing at conventions where you can come walk up to him with any like random shuffled deck of cards, and he will just like flick the cards with his thumb up. I don't know the technique, but he does some weird thing, and then they're all in order. Like Ace Tour
That's
King,
a
Ace
great
Tour
trick,
Queen,
yeah.
King Tour Ace, King Tour Ace. Any random deck of cards, Fritz with a Z or Fritz Alchemada does that trick.
It's amazing. Yeah, he did it for me once with my deck. I still don't understand
Really?
how it works.
Really? I'm still trying to pressure him to do it. I've just heard stories, man.
Oh, yeah, he showed me once, and I was like, this is impossible. But he only did that thing, and then he went away. So I saw him after, but like he doesn't want to talk about it. He just kept it really to himself. But yeah, It's the most amazing thing ever.
Sounds like it. I think that's
So yeah, if you ever see him, then hopefully he can perform it for you.
I think that's a good note to end the podcast on as well. So
Yeah.
thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it.
Yes, of course.
And
Really liked it.
since I want to keep this podcast going and not hunt all the people down myself, do you have anyone that you could bring me in contact with that I could talk to for next episode and that you think would be interesting to have a conversation with?
Who do I know that would be interested in this? Maybe I can bring you in contact with Joe.
Cool. Sounds good.
I think that would be a nice, interesting conversation.
I'm looking forward to that. So,
Yeah.
Danny, thank you so much, and we'll talk
Yeah, you're
about that
welcome.
later.